Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. On our podcast today, we have Ahmed Zaidi, the CEO of Accelerate. Accelerate provides end-to-end services on RPA, AI, Smart OCR, and more. They offer intelligent automation managed services from their delivery centers in US, Colombia, and USA. In this chat, we discuss the evolution of automation, the Accelerate managed services, the future of intelligent automation, and more. Let's listen in. Hi, Ahmed. Welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. It's awesome having you today. Can we start with a quick personal intro?
Thank you very much, Nandan. I really appreciate you having me on. It's a very interesting group of folks, very talented group of folks you've put together. I've been watching your space for a while now. Very informative, very useful. So keep up the good work and looking forward to seeing more informative content from you. As a personal introduction, my name is Ahmed Zaidi. I'm the Chief Executive Officer here at Accelerate, but the title I really like to use is Chief Automation Officer. As the automation guy, I feel that that's a more appropriate title. Just as a personal background, I started my career a long time ago. I'm now aging myself, back in the 90s, as an automation engineer. I tell the story, the first product, I think my second day on the job, they sat me in front of a computer, a Prudential Investment Group, and said, here's a product called SQA Robot. Now you need to program this robot to do test automation. Go ahead and do it. So I've been playing with robots for a very long time now. As a personal journey, I started off in investment banking, capital markets area within Prudential Investments, went on to run quite a few automation, test automation type of projects in various large banks. In the early 2000s, I started a company. I was acquired, and I went on to run the capital markets practice for that acquisition. In 2015, I had a chance to exit that venture. Took a couple of years off. Tried to dabble into a few things, couldn't find my groove on those things, but took that time to learn how to fly, get one with nature, go off-roading, those type of things. In 2016, late 2016, me and one of my friends were talking and said, hey, listen, this automation thing is taking off. Right, I've been hearing this word called RPA. This seems like an interesting space. We should look into it. I went home and downloaded one of the products. I said, hey, listen, I've been doing this for 20 years now, right? 17 years we've been automating, and this is a similar technology. So that was the genesis of Accelerate. We started in 2016 with humble beginnings. Today we're about 370 folks across three continents. We're here in the United States. In South America and Latin America, we have a couple of locations. We have operations, fairly significant operations in India. All of it focused really on automation, right? From discovery all the way to implementation with various platforms. RPA happens to be a big portion of our business. We have strategic partnerships with the major players, UiPath and others. But we also do, in the same automation vein, where RPA is sort of run from a business perspective, we see in the IT space, this rapid development of automation is enabled by API platforms. So we do a lot of MuleSoft work. And in systems of records, we wanted to be specific around verticals and use cases. So we have found sort of our niche in a lot of Salesforce-related implementations, health cloud-related implementations, especially in the health space. So we're doing a lot of that integration work again. But that's also really focused around automation, patient onboarding, referral management, document processing, all of those things that are very prevalent in healthcare. We do a lot of that stuff as well. So long story short, our real focus has always been automation, continues to remain that.
Great. And you personally have a long history with automation, and that's really amazing that you talk of robots in 90s. I mean, that's that's amazing.
It's a very interesting play, right? So it's a very interesting story. But what I when I first got introduced to RPA, I was waiting. I was really waiting for all the test automation players to actually come into the mix and say, hey, we're also RPA. You're using our technology, right? I mean, I think if you look at the genesis of UiPath, right. Those guys were building UI automation libraries, which were being used mostly for test automation, right? So I was waiting for that to happen. In fact, the opposite has happened. Instead of the test automation players jumping into RPA, the RPA players have started jumping into test automation. Right, so right. It's a very interesting thing. Although, look, we all have to thank, you know, the U.S. government for mandating accessibility in operating systems, which allows us to operate the UIs. The underlying technology is very much similar between test automation and RPA, but it's interesting to see that, you know, the use of technology has changed quite a bit and has become acceptable to be done in production.
Yeah, and a lot of test automation players are now getting into RPA because the concepts are similar, right? And yeah, and from an accelerate perspective, so from a phase perspective, are you doing development, doing support, testing? What all are you involved in?
So you would call us a full service shop, right? So I think, and again, look, I look back at our journey and I think my opinion is a little biased, but I think we were thinking in the right direction. Initially we saw that there was a lot of adoption of RPA and there was a dearth of talent, right? There was a dearth of talent to implementations. And we saw that, you know, I think one of the things we saw from my previous experience, I saw, look, I think this is a technology component. There's a little bit of training, but you know, you're gonna have trouble getting very experienced .NET people to do this. And they're not gonna be, because they're not in code all day. So we came up with a training program. We figured out what the right skill set is to create an RPA developer. So we started with that. We started with a lot of RPA development. As we were doing that, we saw two things happen, right? One of the things that we saw happen was we were seeing that as implementations will scale, the support aspect of it was getting left behind, and a lot of the production support, usual application support people were trying to support it. And they were, you know, the usual, you find the issue, you go through the runbook and then call the developer and say, hey, listen, it's not working. Similar things were happening, or development teams were supporting it, which is really detrimental to new development and delivering new automation. So we established our robot operations center, which is a managed service to support the bot. So that was one thing. And we started with development, moved on to support, established that, you know, an efficient global support model, cost-effective support model. The other thing that we saw was the question of what should I automate? What is the return on this? How do I make the business case for this was being asked a lot. And the usual suspects that you go to for these things is the management consulting firms. Of course, they have a lot of experience in this and they're really good, right? Management consulting firms have been very successful, have been around for a very long time. But the challenge was, you know, I spoke to a lot of organizations that said, hey, listen, I don't have the $250,000, $1 million and 9 months to do analysis on a technology that claims to have quick time to value, right? If the RPA vendors are right and you can start automating and delivering things in weeks and not years, right? Then if I go through a 6 month, 9 month exercise of talking to every single person to figure out what they do, it's just not working. So we came up with an efficient way of doing process discovery, both using either technology, which is task mining, process mining tools, or we came up with proprietary methodology and a data model and dashboards that allow us to minimize the involvement or the time commitment that you need from the business business, right? I don't need to know every single click of a process to tell you that there are 18 people doing this thing and there's a cost opportunity there, right? So we're able to look at it more from a business objectives perspective, whether that's productivity or cost or quality or anything like that, and actually come up with a pipeline with an associated ROI. And with our knowledge and experience of having done this, we can also tell you how feasible it is, what is the effort of it, and if you actually hired us to do it, how much would it cost to do it?
Okay. And so do you use, is it a combination of tools plus people who does this opportunity identification and ROI or business case?
Yes. So it depends, right? So for example, if you had a place that has a single system of record that usually has the connectors into process mining tools, SAP, NetSuite, whatever that may be, right? It's easier to go in and say, hey, listen, we can do very quickly implement a tool and within a few weeks come up with a good process list. When that's not the case, when you don't have a single system of record, when you have multiple systems of record and connectors aren't there and data is not easily available, then it has to be a people-led exercise. But again, what I will reiterate is we measure that still in weeks, not in months, right? So anywhere from 6 weeks to 8 weeks type of thing, couple of months, you're done with it, right? You have a business case, you have a list of opportunities with the ROI, with the value, with the cost. And one of the things that we then went further from there and said, okay, now you're looking at two things, right? What's left? What's left is the software itself, right? What is the software that's going to do this? And so for that, we do what's called a managed platform, right? I think we're one of very few vendors out there that you're seeing some of these announcements come out now, but we're one of the first ones to be able to offer sort of consumption-based RPA as a service type of model, right? So managed platform, we manage the platform for you. We provision the licenses for you when you want it, as you consume them. No shelfware, no term sort of commitments and things that, right? So you don't, one of the big challenges that we were trying to solve there is the unit that by which RPA software is sold is still a robot, right? At the end of the day, how many robots should you buy? It's like, nobody has the answer to that really, right? Because unless you have a really good understanding of the process, the volume, the SLAs, you can't predict how many bots you need. You can only take a wild guess and you may be highly over, highly under, depending on what it is, right? It's really a guessing game. So what we've offered to our customers is say, hey, listen, you don't have to make that decision now. We can go on the higher side of it and say, this is what you should budget, but only pay for it as you use it, which also solves the consumption problem that if you went to UiPath Path Forward, they talked about it a lot, right? They talk about consumption, right? So in this model, the robots are being consumed and the growth you're seeing is as a part of the consumption. And then you're able to say, okay, I don't need to spend a lot of money on shelfware or software that'll just sit there. And we'll do that after we've proven our value.
Okay. So, so if I understand it right, so you're abstracting the customer from the licenses or technologies, and you know they just all they can care about is that a process is getting automated and they pay for Absolutely. It as they use it. Is that right?
As they use it, as they go along, and we go a step further. I keep adding to it, right? So now what you have left is now the bots are operating, they're all good, they're being supported, you have exceptions, somebody's looking at them. What's left? What's left is the business exceptions, right? Which either by design, right? You say robot shouldn't do it because it needs human judgment, or by error, whatever that may be. We do what we call, so we extended our ROC operation, right? The Robotic Operations Center, and we call it BROC, right? Business ROC, Business Robotic Operations Center, which actually handles those exceptions. So at the end of the day, the customer says, okay, I want an invoice processed. That's it. I don't care whether the confidence score was 80% or 70% or 90% or three fields were good and four weren't. At the end of the day, I want my invoice digitized, right? So we have the folks who will actually take care of those exceptions. And at the end of the day, based on a volume sort of pricing, we say, hey, listen, we will process 10,000 invoices for you a month, throw them at us. And all you have to worry about is we will give you the licenses to run it, the software to run it, we will automate it, we will support it, and we will also execute the business process.
Okay. So, how do you charge for it? Is it based on the number of invoices or based on transactions, or is it like?
So the BRoC is the general model is by volume. So we do volume capacity. We say, okay, up to X number of we have this much volume, guaranteed volume every processing volume, and then there are some overages and this and that, but you have capacity to do 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 invoices, and they can adjust that, right?
That's an awesome model, right? I mean, this is something like the new outsourcing, if you will. I mean, today we were discussing about it in our club, and you mentioned about the club sometime back. So we have some awesome members, and one of them was suggesting that we should call it as a robo sourcing, which is like outsourcing, but with robots, right? So you're basically replacing the old outsourcing with robot sourcing, which is mainly digital workers are now replacing people, and they can work 24 by 7. There's no offshore onshore. They can work 24 by 7 and take care of things. And so you are actually abstracting this whole robot sourcing, where you have a set of people actually developing this technology, supporting this technology, even supporting their exceptions, so that basically what the customer is seeing is a robo source. I mean, essentially they have actually hired a robotic extension to what they want to do, and I think you call it the new BPO, right?
Absolutely. I think that is the new BPO model. Eventually it will get there, right? The customers are asking for it. I think that the large BPO organizations realize that that is the case, right? You have to realize that a lot of these BPO deals are multi-year deals, and they're based on butts and chairs, right? That's what we call it, right? I'm going to give you 20 people to do this thing, right?
Correct.
And it's difficult to it's not in the best interest of the outsourcer to make that 10 people, right? Because you're charging the unit that you're charging by is people, right? But if I'm sure the customers are going to now start demanding, and they already are, right? They've had I had an interesting conversation with a large bank's chief operating officer a few years ago, and they said we had a large outsourcer in. We put in penalties for not automating. They chose to pay the penalties.
Oh wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, just look at that. So, for them, that's paying the penalties is, better than replacing people, because they're
Because they know
like,
that once it's automated, it can be taken away, right? It can be taken back, and that work is never coming back. Look, I think the outsourcing community is very smart, and they're onto this right now. The large outsourcing deals actually do have these targets and all these things built into it, and the customers are smart. They're saying, "Hey, listen, I'm going to make sure that you automate, because if you don't automate and you keep doing this manually, yes, my work will get done, but I won't have the same competitive advantage as the others would. Whether they're doing it insourced, automated, or outsourced automated, they need that competitive advantage, shorter handle times, 24 by 7 capacity, lower cost that you cannot give people, regardless of how much labor arbitrage you have."
Yeah, and from I'm probably going to let out a small secret here in terms of the outsourcing providers, because I've been part of this outsourcing thing since quite some time. And what an outsourcing provider, like you said, for them it would be like almost cannibalizing what they're doing. And so
Absolutely.
their approach is to, yes, automate, but it will be more of, okay, I'll automate 20%, in the sense, save you 20% in year one, then another 15% in year two, and things like that. And so it'll be a gradual reduction in and bringing in automation, which is probably a pace, probably may not work in this new digital world where we want to get to digital quickly, and otherwise the legacy companies, the legacy businesses could be taken over by any digital new upstart, right? And I think that's where boutique firms like you, Accelerate, shine, because you guys don't have a your main thing is to automate. And so you are not looking to outsource or do things. You're mainly looking to provide a digital
Yeah,
workflow.
that's our bread and butter, right? That setup fee of the automation is our bread and butter. That's what we do best, and we've done a lot of work on that. So I think the you see a lot of veterans from the BPO industry actually now focus just on this. There are some very very big names of folks who have PEs and venture funds that are just looking to establish this type of technology-led BPO organizations, and you'll see more and more.
Right, and I think that's the way to go anyway. And I think they also, from a BPO perspective, they have their own unique advantage because they have been doing this. They know the business process. They only just need to change the mindset, let's move from staffing models to staffing plus automation kind of models,
or transaction models, or capacity models, whatever that may be. If you charge by transaction, right? If that is your unit, then you have an incentive to lower the cost and effort that goes into processing that transaction. So we're seeing a lot of that. But I think, even other than just the BPO thing, I think there's a lot of insourcing happening anyways, which is what we capitalize on also, right? So a lot of folks who have done quite a few engagements where we've insourced the BPO outsourced work through automation and said, okay, yes, now those three people that you have can handle that volume that the 15 people were handling offshore for you. You can just handle that here because that's replaced by robots and you only have to do exceptions. So I think that is the new model. And I think technology is evolving very fast to be able to do a lot of the things that we weren't able to do. Document processing has gotten really good. Machine learning models have gotten much, much, much better. So you're seeing adoption and implementation of those models to do the type of things that you couldn't do, right? To do the type of analysis that you had to do before is now able to be done through automated methods.
The intelligent automation space is rapidly evolving. You guys are on the cutting edge in terms of providing RPA as a service. So how do you see this evolving now in the next probably 3 years?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you say, right? I think very short term, and I'm talking 6 months, 1 year, I think you'll see, and again, we're seeing this more, I think RPA gave document processing software, OCR software, a new life, right? Because everything came to a screeching halt when there was a document. So I think you're seeing more and more of these document processing projects and document processing platforms getting integrated into these RPA platforms, right? You really had more a content management system, more so a document indexing system, more so than a document processing system. I think as models are getting developed and that's happening, that I think is going to be a big wave of next implementations. I think the two or three big things that you will see happen is most likely the RPA platforms are going to evolve more into BPM platforms and give you that workflow capability. And I think the third thing is unstructured data processing has been sort of a skunkworks project in the data science world, right? You hire a bunch of data scientists, they do all this great stuff, but again, a senior engineer at Google once told me, he goes, listen, man, I could write models all day to predict stuff, but I still need to action upon them. And if I don't have a system that actions upon these predictions, there's nothing I can do about it, right? So I think those models are going to be used much more efficiently through these platforms. So you see that reinfer thing with UiPath, right? So you will see more natural language type things. You'll see document processing meld into the natural language processing type of platforms. That will evolve fairly. I think that will have a big impact, and those are the type of things that we will evolve into. But I also do think that just in general, the world is more going towards low code, right? And people are looking at, I think implementation of core systems of record, people are not looking to add more core systems of record, right? The ServiceNow has the same approach. I think, listen, all the system of records I need are there. They're good. SAP for this, Salesforce for that, you know, something else for this. I'm good with my system of record. My bigger problem is all integration. And I think the big enablers of integration are going to continue to be API integration platforms that are evolving very quickly to be able to provide you faster, more secure API integration capabilities. You'll see more connectors. People are going to the cloud more. So now they're cloud-enabled applications. So I think those things are, that will continue to grow. You can see that in Salesforce's sort of investment in MuleSoft and acquisition of MuleSoft. I think they're very bullish on that as well. So I think you'll continue to see automation from both sides. And I think I was just talking to somebody else the other day, and I said, "Hey, listen." They said, "Hey, I don't hear automation as much." And the problem that you're just listening for automation. A lot of automation programs are disguised in digital transformation. They don't call them automation programs. They call them digital transformation programs. So I think both those things are sort of going to be synonymous but one thing's for sure, I think cross-application integration and processing of subjective transactions is going to be sort of the next wave of automation, I think.
Great, great. And just one, I can't help ask this question. Since you've been in this field, many of these people, you know, they see that RPA is a band-aid, and then, you know, it'll, after some time, it'll be taken over and it'll be all replaced by APIs or whatever technology. What do you think about that working with customers? Do you think RPA is going away after some time and being going to be replaced, or it's going to stay?
Mainframe's been dying for 40 years.
I think
I'm being facetious here. Look, I think mainframe runs system of records, so they have that, they have the data in them, so it's not the same sort of analogy. But I don't think RPA replaces your strategic initiatives of digitizing systems and all of that, right? The reason you go to it is I think the quick time to value proposition is such that, hey, listen, it's cheaper for me to build this, right? It's a big enough space, but it's cheaper for me to build this, right? It is faster for me to build this. Yes, I've been asking IT to do this for a while, and there are multiple reasons why they can or cannot do it. I have customers who have homegrown systems and they use RPA as homegrown systems, right? They have the source code, they have the developers for it, yet they choose to use RPA on those systems because it is so cumbersome to do it. It's so, you know, they have integration points with outside systems that don't have any integration points. We're sitting in 2022 and we still are integrating with systems that don't have APIs. You know, I was just talking to someone who was using, I won't name the name, but, you know, a very popular HR management platform that was just literally built within the past 10 years. And they're like, "You don't have APIs for this stuff?" It's like, "Well, yeah, we don't have API for that." It's like, "But you were born yesterday. You were born in the API world, right? How can you not have APIs for this?" So I think yes, it is a more brittle solution than you might have with APIs and real, you know, that type of integration. But I think it is, you know, it is very, it's the value proposition is such that I think it still has a little bit of staying power until, you know, I think it will, like ServiceNow was just a ticketing system, right? But now it's sort of a system of workflow for a lot of areas, right? A lot of places use ServiceNow as a workflow tool, right? They go, "All right, here's where the request comes in and manages through it and it integrates with everything else." I think very similarly, I don't want to call it a band-aid solution. Yes, it is not as, it may not be at times as robust as you would have an API-based integration or tight integration, but I think it is better than not having it at all. So yes, I do think a lot of RPA robots will have a shelf life. They will be changed. They will be integrated into either systems of record or strategic system changes that will happen. Yes, that will happen. But I think the horizon for those changes is so long that I think there's still a lot of steam everywhere to do that. Mainframe systems are still running, man. So until I think IT has been trying to get rid of Excel macros for 30 years, that hasn't happened yet. So yes, the technical debt is a concern, but I do think that the way RPA platforms manage and provide a management console on top of administrative and governance capability on top of these automations makes them a little bit more robust than not having anything like that.
Yeah, and like you say, it's we've yeah, technical debt is always or debt has always been there, and I think we can get better, right? I mean, the way I look at it is, we are putting a set of bots, and today they have their arms as maybe a UI integration because an API is not available. As soon as an API is available, yeah, I can replace that arm with an API arm or any other arm, which works better at that point of time. So we are just replacing, we are actually putting in that framework so that you can automate with any technologies. And I think, like you said, most of these platforms are going to become more like a BPM platform with end-to-end services. And then it's more of, which arms to provide. And especially I like the way they have been developing. It's all libraries, it's all activities. So you're just adding newer activities and they come in and it's, I think scalable. Again,
Absolutely.
it depends on the tools, so, but
Absolutely.
yeah. So, but thank you so much, Ahmed. It was great chatting with you today. So I just wanted
Absolutely.
to ask you where people can find and connect with you before we go.
Okay, accelerate.com or my email address is ahmed.zaidi@accelerate.com. Just reach out to me and find me on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. So
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll leave a link.
the usual hang spots.
I'm sorry?
The usual hanging out spots.
Yeah, the usual hangouts. Yeah, and yeah, I'll leave a link to LinkedIn, to your profile as well as to Accelerate so
Thank
that
you.
people can find you. So again,
I really appreciate it, Nandan.
yep, thank you so much. Great having you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.